PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. I'm Jenny Detweiler, and friends, I'm so happy about this episode. A year and a half ago or so, I had my friend Sarah Pasquale on the podcast. We did a segment called Sarah and Jenny Read, and we talked about the book Embracing Rhythms of Work and Rest. We had such a good time, I told her I was going to have her back sometime to do another book, and that's what we're doing today. This time, Sarah and I read the book Try Softer by Andy Kolber. And in today's episode, we'll chat about the book, things that we learned, things that we gleaned, things that we would recommend. But we also totally went off script and talked about a bunch of other things as well. So hold on tight for this roller coaster of a conversation. I think there is a lot of good information to be gleaned, though, so I hope that you'll stay to the very end. Sarah's in training to become a spiritual director, so I really appreciated her perspective on this book. And on my side, I talked more about it from a therapeutic standpoint, since that's my background. Sarah is wise and deep and a breath of fresh air. I think you're really going to enjoy this. So with that, let's jump into the conversation. Well, hey, Sarah, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really glad that we could talk again. Do you want to introduce yourself again or like share some updates since the last time we talked?
Yeah. Hey, Jenny, I'm so glad to be back. I really enjoyed my time with you last year or however long ago. Was it a year and a half ago or something, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, I'm Sarah Pasquale. I live in Clarkston, Georgia, so just outside of Atlanta in a community with a lot of refugees. And I serve on staff as the Minister of Spiritual Formation at my church called Resonate Atlanta. And I kind of act there doing pastoral care and writing our curriculum, teaching classes, and also work as a spiritual director. So I have four kids. They are 16, 16, 14, and 11. The youngest two are biological and the oldest two are adopted. And then my husband is a business owner here in Atlanta.
Perfect. And part of the reason that I had you back on is because it's so fun to talk to you about books. Number one, you're really knowledgeable and really well-read. And I love to talk to you about things that matter because you have a deep heart for things that matter. And I think a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast, and you're a spiritual director. I think last time you were almost one, like you're in training maybe, and now you're practicing.
I'm more than halfway through my program.
Okay.
So I'm still in program to do it, but we offer direction as we go through the program as well. So
cool.
I'm doing a lot more spiritual direction than I was doing before, and I am more equipped, but we're still learning. There's not technically like a certifying body, so it's not, I'll end with a certificate in spiritual direction. Technically anybody can do it, but I do have a lot more tools now and a lot more practice than last time we talked.
That's awesome. So before we start, you know, I love to follow you on Facebook and Instagram, and you do these like, what are they, monthly reviews of books that you've been reading? Are they monthly or bi-monthly? Something like that.
Well, at this point, they are whenever I decide to do them.
Girl, I'm at that season of life too. I feel that deep in my bones. So, yes.
Well, I think something else kind of neat that we talked about last time is like my, you know, up and down relationship with social media. And since we've talked, I actually deleted my Instagram account. So I don't exist on Instagram anymore. And I haven't for about a year. So I do still have Facebook and I get on there every once in a while. And then, yeah, I share my books as I remember too.
So one of the things that I love that you do is like reviews of books that you've read, and you'll do five or six at a time and give mm-hmm. stars and what you thought and recommendations. So I wondered if you could start by talking about this book, which, just so our audience knows, we're talking about Try Softer by Andy Kolber, a fresh approach to move us out of anxiety, stress, and survival mode and into a life of connection and joy. So what is your review of this book? Can you give it to us?
Yeah, I loved this book. So I would say that this book, I read it first earlier in this year, 2024, and I would say it's my new go-to suggestion when approaching sort of mindfulness and personal growth from a specifically Christian perspective. Andy Kolber does such a good job at helping us to see how our life experiences, both things that she would call like big T trauma and also just little T trauma or little you know, things that impact us minorly, how they inform the way we interact with others and even how we view God. And so the first half of the book is like sort of a summary of what happens in our bodies and our minds as we interact with the world around us when we've experienced hard things. And then the second half of the book is more unpacking tools and practices we can incorporate into our lives in order to better be anchored in God and to find more kind of healing within ourselves. So I like how, you know, we have a big move in our culture towards mindfulness and self-awareness and self-growth, self-help. And those things are good, but I think we lack when we think that the answers are going to be within us and we don't look outside of ourselves to the Lord. And so I think she does a really good job kind of marrying those two things.
Yes, I completely agree. In fact, just for like a little bit of background, I was thinking about this before we talked. I was trained as a counselor in the early 2000s, like the mid-aughts, I guess. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was a lot about humanistic, but really a big push towards CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy. And that's how, more so how I was trained and what was big at the time.
Yeah.
And that's all about like changing our thinking, changing our beliefs, reframing negative thoughts, changing our behaviors. And there is so much value to that. And there's some things that are still really good that I use from that. But I would say as a Christian counselor, it fit very well with some of the biblical beliefs that people have held for a long time. Like, well, they're not biblical, but what would people have thought of as biblical? Like, yeah. You can't trust your emotions. Feelings will lie to you. Don't pay attention to your body because it's part of the flesh. You know, you can't trust it. It's going to lead you astray. So it stuck more to like thinking behavior, thinking and doing. And the last 15 years, there's been so much new information coming out about interpersonal neurobiology through Dan Siegel, Stephen Porges, Bessel van der Kolk, about trauma, about neurodivergence, like so much new information that has been incorporated. And those are some of the things that are happening in the secular world. But there have been some really great Christian therapists who've taken that same information and applied it in biblical, I think, and healthy, faithful approaches. Like Kurt Thompson, like Andy Kolber, and people like that, and KJ Ramsey. And so it's been really interesting to watch and also to incorporate in my office, because I feel like we do ourselves a disservice if we don't pay attention to all the parts of the self. And so if we're leaving emotions out, we're leaving our bodies out. Those are huge things that we need to pay attention to and that truly get shut down in trauma. And so if we're told don't pay attention to those, it can lead us to some scary places. So I really loved this book, and I think she does such a great job of talking about it in a way that both therapists can understand as well as lay people. Super good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think something she does really well is she sees and describes a person as one whole being.
Yes.
We oftentimes compartmentalize people, or we sort of segment them into like your head or your heart or your body. And we treat or try to like kind of focus in on one thing. And I guess some of that is like what CBT does, or like, you know, psychiatry or whatever sorts of things. But God did not make us as compartmentalized people. He made us as a whole being with these different sorts of components to it. And so helping us to understand that the things that happen to our bodies affect our minds and our hearts, and the things that we think about affect our feelings and our bodies. And I think she does such a good job, particularly integrating like the physical components to how we approach kind of like working through things. And that is something that we tend to neglect in the faith world. And she talks about like sort of like this form of Gnosticism when we only think about the mind and the heart. But I really, really like that part about the book, is like, know that God has given you a body and it has limits, but it also tells you things. And so even learning to sort of honor our bodily reactions when something happens, to say, oh my gosh, my body's telling me something here. I'm going to stop and listen to it.
That's right.
Or my counselor has told me before, she was like, you know, our body is designed to like express our feelings, usually through tears. And I'm somebody like, I have a hard time crying. And she's like, if you don't cry it out, it's probably going to come out another way sideways because your body has to get it out. And I was like, wow, that's a good word.
It is. So let me ask you this. How do you hack your crying? Like, how do you make that happen?
I don't like to do it, so it's not very frequent. Sometimes I'll just like watch, like, you know, the things that kind of don't matter make me cry, like a Publix commercial or like certain TED Talks or like a novel or something like that. And so I kind of almost have to like start it. So like maybe I'll watch a TED Talk or I'll like read part of a book that makes me emotional, and then I'll like move. I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to let the tears come. But it's still not a strength of mine.
I love that so much. So speaking personally and as a therapist, I've been on this journey for the last few years of learning things in my practice and also learning things personally at the same mm-hmm. time and having those things coincide. So there's nothing like learning in the School of Hard Knocks, you know, the things that you learn in the classroom. So
yeah,
it's so beautiful to see what healing looks like, or what this path of progress and the things that the Lord is teaching us and learning to try softer. Like I've been learning a lot of the things that she talks about in this book, and I've been leading my clients down some similar paths, mm-hmm. even though I haven't read her book before, but it follows very similarly the things that I've been learning and the things that I've been teaching my clients about honoring our experiences.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that is one thing that I really wanted to pay attention to, is like the idea of attunement. So that means like being in tune with the person in the room that you're with, like paying attention, not just to what they're saying, but trying to understand what they're saying, trying to emotionally connect in a way. And the same thing should happen with our own selves. Like we should be able to be attuned to what's going on with ourselves. But very often, if we've come from hard places in life, if we've had childhood trauma, if we grew up with families that didn't honor emotions, et cetera, or if we've been through big things that we've had to survive, we kind of stop attuning to ourselves mm-hmm. because it feels dangerous, or we don't think people are going to be able to understand us, or that we're being too much, or any of the above. So I really like how she gave specific examples of that and exercises that help us pay closer attention to what's going on inside of ourselves and not learn to honor it in a way.
Yeah. And you know, that like attunement or that attentiveness is something I have been sort of trained to practice in spiritual direction as well. Being very present and intentional listeners is a big thing that we do in spiritual direction. Kind of like the way we describe it is, I have one ear open to my directees in the room with me and kind of one ear open to the Lord and the Holy Spirit. But that looks like paying attention to repeated words or body language when they get excited, or they like, you know, kind of like put their head down. And that oftentimes can reveal more to the directee. And I'm sure you experience this in therapy as well, than anything they're saying. When I sit back with someone, I'm like, I just heard you say the word practical over and over and over again. Tell me more what you mean by that. And that's oftentimes what really exposes what's happening inside them.
That is beautiful. Yes. Yes. Very similar to what we do in therapy. And I love that so much. So, I was going to actually talk about this later, but since we're already talking about it, I'll just bring it up now. One of the things that has been helpful for me in learning how to practice this stuff is that I got trained in a trauma therapy called brain spotting about 2.5 years ago. And it is born out of EMDR, but it actually, you're practicing focused mindfulness as you're doing it, but you're having to pay attention to what's going on in your body, what emotions are coming up. So it's one thing to say like, okay, go be mindful. I find that very difficult to do. And I find if I tell people to go do that for therapy homework, they can't do it. They don't know how to do it. Like that, what does that even mean? You know, but as you're practicing brain spotting, you're actually having to go through it. And so as I have done that or practiced it for myself or had it done for myself, I know what it feels like on the inside. It helps me pay attention to what's going on the inside of my body and the emotions that come with it. And as I sit with other people in the room, it's like a very, very attentive way of being attuned to another individual, kind of like on hyperspeed, because I'm like very tuned in with what's happening with them as I sit with them as they're processing. And so it's been really helpful as an experiential way of doing a lot of the things that she talks about and how to experience like the pendulation. We kind of do some of that in brain spotting and things like that, but just not broken into bits. It's like all in one. So I found that really interesting. A lot of the things that she says I'm doing in trauma therapy, just like in one module instead of broken apart, which I think she does that in the book, but I think she's an EMDR practitioner and some of what she talks about is that as well. So,
yeah, I think so. I'm not super familiar with brain spotting. I've heard about it, but what is the phrase? And I know this is a little bit outside the book. I'm just curious. The phrase brain spotting, how does that connect to what you're actually doing?
Okay.
Does that make sense? Are you spotting things in your brain or like what?
So EMDR, they found moving between the hemispheres, either with your eyes or tapping or something like that, helps you process. Yeah. So what happens is normally when we go through the process of remembering something, it gets stored regularly. But if we go through trauma, particularly if we hit the freeze response, our body is like, it doesn't know what to do with it. And it like stores it differently. And it comes back as triggers, like we have big reactions to things or we get afraid when something happens. We may not even have like an actual explicit memory of what the thing is, but we're having this big reaction out of nowhere. Stuff like that, where it's like our bodies remember and they're trying to protect us and keep us safe. And they haven't really processed through whatever that memory was. And it happens to all of us in little ways, you know, and then some people in big ways with the big T traumas. So with brain spotting, what happened was an EMDR practitioner had slowed it down and was going back and forth and noticed that in one spot, their eyes kind of got frozen in a specific place. So they just held it in that one place and just let them process while they were looking in that one spot. And it's pretty much like a fine-tuned place. Instead of going back and forth, it's like we found a specific place that's related in the brain. It's like stuff is being stored in that lower brain where it has access to kind of pull it out. And then as we do that, our bodies start going through the process of like whatever it's been storing along with that. So that's a very brief way of talking about it, but it's very interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for kind of describing that. Explaining.
Yeah. I'm not sure I did a good job, but did you have any more questions?
No, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah. And then we listen to bilateral sounds at the same time. So it is processing across the hemispheres at the same time. So, yeah. So I wanted to ask you back to the book.
Yeah.
Andy Culver talks at the beginning about white knuckling life. And how so many of her clients also have been doing that. Not trying softer, but like, I'm going to have to get through this at any cost. And I'm just going to have to keep going, even if I'm exhausted. So I'm wondering for you, what does white knuckling look like?
Yeah. I'm very familiar with white knuckling.
Me too.
So I kind of have two pathways to do this. And it's all for me to avoid pain. I'm an Enneagram 7 kind of almost through and through. I've got a pretty strong 8 wing, but definitely like the 7 drives me to avoid pain, to avoid discomfort. And so kind of my first protocol, especially as a person of like faith as a Christian, is to sort of talk myself out of the difficulty in a sort of unhealthy spiritual optimism. And so I think that sometimes looks like focusing on the bright side or being like, I'm not going to feel this. I'm just going to like worship music my way through this sort of struggle, read the Bible verse about overcoming and communicating with others that like, I'm okay because my hope is in Jesus. Now, all of those things are true. And all of those things are practices that should be employed as believers. But I think there's a way that we do it on the surface level without actually engaging what's happening within us. And the goal for me would be, and the goal in the book is to go into this like hard place and sit in it for a minute and see Jesus show up. And once you can find your way through that, you can listen to the worship songs, read the Bible verses, communicate, I'm okay because my hope is in Jesus from a place of deeper, more secure trust that has been honest kind of with where I am, but still has hope. So anyway, that's what I don't like to do though. And so I tend to like either talk myself out of it with sort of an unhealthy optimism, or I just do like sort of like numbing or avoiding. And I think like, you know, I tend to numb through like distraction and entertainment. And so I think a lot of people numb in different ways, probably most of us numb in some way, shape or form. But I would say like my vices of white knuckling on those hard days where I'm not making healthy choices would be like overeating, specifically sugar, scrolling on my phone, or sometimes like buying more than I need. Anything that gives me that little like dopamine fix that makes me feel good for a second or distracts me from either hard things or boredom.
Sarah, I don't know why, but I did not know you were an Enneagram 7. I guess we didn't talk about this last time. I was thinking you were a 3 because you told me how productive you were last time.
Oh, you can get so much done. I think that's like, no, I'm definitely a 7. But I'm a very productive 7.
Just curious, what is your husband?
He's a 9.
No wonder everybody likes him. He's such a sweetheart.
He is. I know. He is so nice. Everybody does like him. He's very likable. Yeah, we've had to learn a lot about conflict, you know, because both of us, like neither of us love conflict, and we both avoid it in our own ways. And so when we have to work through hard things, it takes a lot of both of us kind of stepping out of our comfort zones.
Yeah, marriage.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
I'm guessing you're a 2 because you're a therapist, but that's probably, okay.
Yeah. And I'm married to a 5, so we're very different. Okay.
Yeah, but lots of
thinkers and feelers. So we have to work through things. But he likes to withdraw a little bit too. So, and I don't. I want to have it out. I want to talk it through.
You want to lean in.
I want to lean in. That's right. So my white knuckling is so different than what you just said in some ways, which is really fascinating. And that's why I think it's so helpful to think about different perspectives. And part of the reason I love the Enneagram is like, white knuckling doesn't look the same for everybody, even though it seems like it would, but it doesn't. Yeah. So for me, it looks like I can never get away from my feelings, unfortunately. I can numb them out by distracting myself a little bit, but they're big and I feel them all the time. And so if there's a lot going on around me and with other people, I feel their stuff inside of me. And so chaos really affects me, but it also makes me feel like I need to do whatever's in front of me. And like, I need to be helpful to other people, or I don't want to let people down and people are counting on me. And I've already, you know, signed up for too many obligations when I was in a good headspace, but now I have to follow through because I said I was going to do it, you know? Yeah. And so often it leads me to feeling burned out, resentful, irritable, overwhelmed, you know, like on a good day, I can just push through it and I will get the things done. I'm good at getting the things done. The people around me may suffer because I'm in a really foul mood, but I will get the things done. But one of the things that I'm learning with the trying softer, and I'd love to hear from you in a second about that too, is giving myself space, and particularly when it comes to nervous system care, about giving myself space where people are not needing me, so I can come down out of the zone and really feel whatever I need to feel and process whatever I need to process and pick and choose from a place of safety, what is right for me to be doing versus feeling obligated to do things that other people want me to do versus what maybe God wants me to be doing or where I need to be setting my priorities because I don't have this never-ending energy that I once thought I had. Yeah. So trying to take space and kind of what you said too, like, I don't do this as often as I need to, but it's something I'm trying to practice is like making space for meditation, time in the Bible, quiet, solitude a little bit, which, you know, at this season of life is not a ton of time, but
it's hard. Yeah. I would imagine that for you and just kind of as an empath or an empathetic person, boundaries are really, really important for you to kind of hold intentionally prior to entering a conversation and then as you walk away as well. Have you kind of found that and sort of learned how to do that over time?
Yeah. See, now we're definitely going away from the book. So I hope people go read the book, but this is like Enneagram next level. I have figured out that my subtype is self-preservation, which in a way always keeps me boundaried because whereas some twos will give and give and give and give and don't have any self-preservation, I have like these two parts that are always at war. Like my heart is like, oh, check in on so-and-so. Oh, I can't wait to hang out with so-and-so. Oh, I can't wait to like volunteer in this way. And then it's like my gut is like, pull back. This person's going to need too much from you. don't give out your phone number to this person because they're never going to leave you alone. You know, it's like I have both at one time. So I think that it's been really helpful to be in a job where I can help people, but that there's natural boundaries already in place. Like I have to follow legal and ethical boundaries, but in personal things, I do have to work on that for sure.
Yeah. That's, have you ever heard of the work of David Wang? He's a professor at Fuller.
No.
And he does a lot of writing on like pastoral care or counselors and therapists regarding spiritual formation. And he talks about how people who end up in these kinds of helping line of works tend to have like higher ACE scores, adverse childhood experiences, or tend to be on the front lines of trauma. And I think about that in regard to kind of what I do in pastoral care, and that I don't have the same sort of like legal boundaries that a therapist does. It's not sort of a transaction in some way, shape, or form, but I'm at the hospital bed and I'm also going to church with these people and they're my community. It's interesting navigating caring for myself and drawing healthy boundaries in that way for sure.
Yeah. And she talks about boundaries. I love her chapter on boundaries. So Sarah, mm-hmm. for you, I'm really interested. I've thought before about how difficult it would be for me to be a pastoral counselor. So I wonder for you, like, how do you do that? How do you set boundaries? Okay. On the spot, we can take it off.
I'm a pretty high capacity person, and I'm not high on like the two in Enneagram. And I do feel deeply for people, but I'm not my number one spiritual gift driver isn't mercy. And so I want to say that carefully because I do truly care about the people I spend time with, but I don't tend to take on responsibilities for them. Right. In a way that others may. Yeah. And so I think that helps me to sort of have appropriate boundaries set. And then I think some other big things, like just even around trying softer back to the book, is like I need to Sabbath on a regular basis. And I need to be in regular counseling and spiritual direction myself. Every time after I lead a spiritual direction session, I usually do kind of my own reflection of what's coming up and what's being revealed in me through this spiritual direction time, so I can make sure I'm not moving into a role of trying to save someone or seeking my own sort of validation in caring for others. And that comes for me just with a lot of reflection and usually guiding from my counselor and spiritual director.
So making space for yourself and your own growth and your own reflection time. Yeah.
And I have to be really intentional about that because, like I said, my white knuckling is avoiding feeling things and thinking and reflection. It's never something I want to do, but it is something that I practice so frequently now that I'm not nearly as afraid of it. I was thinking the other day about how I used to, like, being awake in the middle of the night when I couldn't fall asleep was the most horrific feeling in the world to me. Or like, I remember when I was in like high school and I would have a sleepover at a friend's house. And if I woke up before they did and I just would lay in bed awake, like it was the worst feeling of my life. And now, I mean, I still want to sleep through the night, but if I'm awake, I'm not so upset by it anymore because I'm not afraid to be alone with myself and my thoughts, or I'm not uncomfortable by it anymore. But it's taken years for me to learn to lean into that silence and that solitude and commune with the Lord in it.
That truly is like the mark of a healthy person, because most people cannot be alone with themselves. And I'm going to be honest, I'm better than I used to be, but I'm not great at it either. So way to go, Sarah.
Well, it's not easy. I'm not a pro for sure. But it has become an essential practice of mine. And I can sense pretty quickly, you know how like when you're more attuned to things, you sense sooner when you're getting kind of off?
Yes.
And that's what Andy Colbert does a really good job of helping people to notice, especially physically. And so I kind of notice it a little bit more spiritually and almost feel a longing to like get away, which is amazing. If you knew me, you know, even 5 or 7 years ago.
You're hitting on something really big, like that being attuned piece. Like we get really good at ignoring things. When you learn to ignore body signals, and the same thing with emotions, then you don't recognize when they're there. But when you start paying attention again, at the beginning, it's really uncomfortable. But then as you get better at it, you you become more aware, and it takes, there's not so much of a delay to get to the point, and it doesn't have to get so big for you to notice it. Like, it doesn't have to get to a panic attack before you pay attention, which is such a big deal. That's what you're talking about. But even spiritually, we can do that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think so. And I think about how, you know, if you're training for a race or something, if you're doing a couch to 5K, your first run, you feel horrible. Like, it's hard work. But as you continue to practice it, it becomes easier. Even putting on your running shoes is easier. And you almost begin to enjoy it rather than feel miserable.
Yes. Okay, I had one more thing I wanted to talk to you about from the book. So our theme this year on the podcast is being a human in process. And I picked that. I feel like actually the Lord picked it, but had to put me in a headspace to hear it. Because maybe there's this idea in culture that there's like this place where we're fixed. You know, like, I have this problem, but if I take the right medication, it'll go away. Or I've got this issue, but if I find the right therapy practice or the right therapist, I'll be whole again. Or, and I hate to say it, but because we live in this diagnosis culture, sometimes people feel like they're a problem to be fixed and not like it's an ongoing journey in a way. So I wanted to read a quote that she put at the beginning because I felt like she summarized that really well, what I was trying to get across with this season. She said, "We don't like to sit in tension or process, especially when we know it may mean harder work. But in all I've learned as a therapist, and all I've experienced as a human in this world, often the hard way, I believe the true work is slow and deep. That's how we truly heal. This is why the ability to think about personal growth, people, issues, and relationships as a process matters a great deal. When people begin to understand that change happens in layers and is rarely linear, it's as if someone took a grueling weight off of them. It takes as long as it takes. It's okay to be unfinished. It's absolutely normal to be imperfect. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. As we accept the idea that process is part of what it means to be human, we're less intimidated by our unmet goals and are kinder to the wounded part of ourselves." And I really love how she said it that way.
Yeah.
So I'm curious for you, like, in spiritual formation, how does a human being in process, like, you guys are working through process, but how do you see that?
Yeah. Oh man, this is the thing that gets me so excited to talk about, because this is the work of spiritual formation, which is, you know, being formed into the image of Christ, kind of like from one degree of glory to another, as it talks about in 2 Corinthians. And I think sometimes we want to like make ourselves right enough for God, and we miss the union and communion with Him. But we are created to be in dependence with God. And I think one of the other things that we sometimes forget is that God has made us with limits, and He knows and understands our limits better than we do. He knows that I don't know the whole story, and I cannot maintain with, you know, like, outside of faith, the perspective that God has. And so He gives us grace and compassion to be in process. And so we want to become more like Jesus. We want to throw off sin that hinders us, and we want to run with perseverance the race marked out for us. But that's not so we can like cross the finish line and crush it. It's so we can learn to live in communion with Christ, how we were designed to be. And part of that looks like embracing our imperfections. And we can be so heavily driven on grace and so opposed to works. And I think that's, you know, a good sort of fruit of the Protestant Reformation. But at the same time, like, let's not forget that grace tastes the sweetest to those who really know what they've been saved from or what they're being called into. But that does involve the hard work of reflection and repentance, and confronting our own patterns of sin sort of face to face, and then leaning into the Lord for it instead of trying to kind of like fix it so we can be better. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I don't even know if I spoke to what you were saying, but like,
yes,
this
no,
is the
totally
thing
does.
I love to talk about.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, you're kind of talking about sanctification. Maybe you used that word, maybe you didn't, but that is the process, right? Like, there's this moment that we're in communion. I'm like, we become part of Christ's family. And then there's all the rest of our lives, and He's not done with us. Yeah. It's not static. It doesn't stop. It's like this slow. And I kind of think of it, maybe this is a therapist way of thinking about it, but of like, we're on a journey with him and he doesn't take us up the highest mountain first. Sometimes, you know, it's like a little bit at a time, he reveals different things about himself to us and also different things about ourselves to us, or about relationships, or about ways that we need to grow and change, like different rooms in a house that have been shut up for a long time. And he doesn't demolish the whole thing at one time. He like gently, sometimes not so gently, but usually gently pulls things out when they're ready to be dealt with. And I'm really thankful for it.
Yeah, it almost seems like God is more patient with our process of sanctification than we are with ourselves.
I think so.
Just his kindness and tenderness, even in not bringing it all out at once or addressing it all at once, but sort of giving us these things that are like little by little being conformed to his image. Again, from one degree of glory to another. And there's freedom in that. That's why we do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have gone through over the past 6 or 8 months, this sort of what I would say is like a desert season where it has just felt like time in the desert. And it's been harder for me to like find or experience the presence of God and understand where we're going and what we're doing. But the more I've sat in this desert place, and I've spent a lot of time in actually in Genesis 16, the story of Hagar at the well, and how it was when she was at the well in the desert where she learned, you know, she's the first person in scripture to give God a name, and she calls him, "You are the God who sees." And she had a son named God Hears. And it made me think about how people who live in the desert have very attuned senses to what's going on because so little happens. So when you hear like a bird cry out, or when you feel a breeze or notice a temperature change, you see it immediately and you're very attuned to what's happening versus like, you know, I'm in Georgia and there's like so many trees and there's so many birds, there's so much stimulus. I don't notice the tiny little things. And so that even makes me think that like sometimes God leads us away from these times and seasons of a tremendous amount of fruit so we can learn to be attentive and attuned to him in the tiny things we wouldn't notice in seasons of abundance and harvest, you know?
I think that's exactly right. That's such a good word, Sarah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And I think it's probably encouraging for me, but also the people who are listening, because sometimes it does feel really quiet. Yeah. Sometimes it's because we're going through, speaking of trying softer, like anxiety or like big things, which make it harder to concentrate on the Lord.
Right.
And sometimes it's because actually he has us in the wilderness. Just like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good word.
So what are some, when you think of these practices of trying softer, what are some things that you feel like you already do in the book or some things that you wanted to start incorporating?
You know, I don't do a ton of this for myself, but I do a lot on my Instagram stuff. And I think it works really well for people. I do it some, but breath prayers, I think, are a really great way of like centering, of number one, remembering something that's important and talking to God about it, but also allowing our bodies to calm down at the same time. So I really like that. But she had, at the end of her book, she had a meditation, practicing loving kindness meditation. And you can do it for yourself. You can do it for someone else, or you can do it for all of creation. And it goes like this, as you sit comfortably and notice what's happening inside of yourself and get ready. Then you recite as you breathe, "May I experience Christ's love. May I experience Christ's peace. May I experience Christ's presence. May I experience Christ's compassion." And then I really like that it's not just for us. Then she says that we can put somebody else's name in, you know, somebody that we want to pray for, or somebody that we want blessings for, somebody maybe that we've been in conflict with or that has been triggering to us or something like that. And we can say, "May that person experience Christ's love," or "May my church experience," or "May all of creation," which, you know, right now as we're recording, there's been a big hurricane that's come through and demolished a lot of my state. And so we're seeing a lot of that. And we could say that creation is groaning. Mm-hmm. So may creation experience Christ's love. So I really like that practice. Were there any that stood out to you?
You know, I think for me, I think combining sort of the practices of like trying softer with my body and with my emotions and those sorts of things together, because I just, again, I tend to kind of shut stuff out, particularly paying attention to how my body is responding to things. I'm still not very aware. And you know, my counselor will ask me a lot, like, where do you feel that in your body? And then I'll have to like sit back for a second and be like, I have no idea.
Sarah, I almost asked you that earlier.
Oh, really?
I did it. Yeah.
I would be like, I don't know.
I'm curious for you as an Enneagram 7, is it easier to notice sensations in your body or emotions, or do they feel the same?
It's actually probably easier to notice sensations in my body. And maybe that's come over practice and over time. Because something interesting about Enneagram 7s is that we operate in, I think, the head triad.
Yes.
Or is it the, right? And mm-hmm. so like there's logic and reason to what we do. And so like I had a meeting with a teacher at one of my kids' schools yesterday, and it was like a really frustrating meeting because the teacher wasn't prepared. And I remember getting off the phone and I was like, feeling all the things, but I could feel it in my whole body. And I couldn't, I probably couldn't name the emotions as quickly as I would be able to name where I felt it.
Yeah. Yeah. So becoming more attuned with your body, which she had, I think, a few exercises in here. She did mm-hmm. a body scan, and then there were a few other ones as well that she did. In fact, listeners to the podcast, if you're reading through this book, a few of the ones that I do at the beginning of podcasts, sometimes she has in here, like the body scan.
Yeah, or like the, I can't even remember what I was going to say right now.
And she talks about a grounding of like, hear three things, see three things.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think I learned it as like the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought her compartmentalization exercise was really interesting. I practiced it once the first time I read it, and I'd never heard about it before.
I'm trying to remember what that is. Can you explain?
Where you like picture the thing that upsets you, and then you like
containment
in your mind, like put it in a container.
Yeah, containment.
And push it away.
Uh huh.
Oh, containment. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have not heard of that, but I'm thinking that comes from EMDR. I think that may be one of the resourcing things that they do sometimes with that, or with some anxiety techniques. And I think it's really helpful. I mean, I tried it one day. Did you try it?
Yeah.
What did you find when you did it?
I had to keep practicing it throughout the day.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It wasn't a one and done, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not somebody who probably has experienced like a big T traumatic moment, or at least in ways that impact me on a regular basis. I have been through EMDR, and so I would probably have a different answer before therapy and stuff. But it's mostly for minor things that just, you know, kind of work me up over time and throughout the day.
Yeah. So we didn't fully describe it, and I don't want anybody to leave this podcast and go prescribe themselves therapeutic techniques without somebody who's providing or helping them through it. But basically she talks about containment as being like taking this big thing that is dysregulating inside of us, like a thought, an anxious thought or an anxious feeling, and putting it inside some kind of container that can hold it for us that we can come back to it later instead of having to feel it so big inside of ourselves and not being able to get away from it. Is that a good way of saying it? Would you say it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think like it's in The Body Keeps of Score, I think, where he talks about how we can't work through emotions if we've moved into like it's our limbic system, right? Like the fight, flight, or fear response. And so even she does a lot of grounding techniques to help you settle yourself, to settle your physical body enough so that you can work through a hard thing and learn how to process it and kind of come out on the other side.
Yeah. And one thing that we'll talk about later this spring, friends, is the window of tolerance and regulation and dysregulation, which we've talked a little bit about before, but she talks a whole lot about in this book. So keeping ourselves in the window of tolerance or finding our ways back to it. She talks a lot about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for having this conversation. Like we went deep and wide, kind of makes me need to sing
it's
a little bit.
It's been so great. I love talking to you about this kind of stuff, or really anything, Jenny. You always have great insights and you're easy to talk to. And I always learn from you. So I appreciate that.
Ditto. Is there anything else you wanted to say you didn't get a chance?
I don't think so. I just encourage your listeners to pick it up and flip through it kind of wherever they are. And you, if you're someone who's offering care to people, whether formally or informally, it can be really helpful. And if you're somebody who's just working through your own stuff, as we all are, this book can be really helpful for that person as well.
I agree wholeheartedly. Thanks again, Sarah, for being on today's podcast episode. I really appreciate your wisdom, and it is always fun to talk with you. Well, friends, if you enjoyed this conversation and you'd like to dig a little bit deeper, I hope that you'll go out and get the book, Try Softer, A Fresh Approach to Move Us Out of Anxiety, Stress, and Survival Mode, and Into a Life of Connection and Joy. And that's by Andy Kolber, who, by the way, has been on plenty of podcasts, so you can go look her up and probably find some interviews as well if you'd like to know more about her. And I will link to that book in today's podcast show notes. Well, if you enjoyed this conversation, I hope you'll share it with a friend. Tell other people about PRN, Pause, Renew Next via social media, send a link, give a review, or word of mouth is my favorite. And that is all for today's podcast episode. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, Renew, Next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.